welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast where we invite awesome neighbors to join us on the front porch to share stories and tips so that we can learn from them and be inspired by them. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and as always, I'm joined on the front porch by my colleague and my neighbor, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hey, good neighbors. What's up? Feeling feisty today.
Oh, my. Well, there's a good reason for that, actually.
That's right.
Because this week is the second part in a two-part series interview that we did with Lissa Regeer. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode yet, I would definitely recommend going back and checking that one out because it's super awesome. And in that interview, Lissa tells the story of her organization, which is called Thrive Allen County, and how they approach community development work and some of that history. So it's a good foundation.
Yeah. And this week is going to be very exciting because we think, of course, neighboring comes alive in the stories.
Yeah.
And so now we're going to jump right in with some of the stories that Lissa told us about, like things that just blew my mind about this little tiny rural county in southeast Kansas.
Yes. It's so good. So good.
Yeah.
So grab a chair, maybe something cold or warm to drink. And you're probably going to want to buckle your seatbelt for this
That's
one because
right.
it's so good. Join us on the front porch for the second interview with Lissa Regeer.
I want to hear more about the focus on the people of Allen County being the solution instead of hoping someone else will come in and take care of it. I know I don't have a ton of small town experience, but I know you, in hearing you talk another time, you had the same kind of complaints that we have in our very urban setting, where it's like, why doesn't somebody else come in and pay attention to us and fix the things that are going wrong in our community?
Yeah.
And you guys somehow flipped that script so that people said, nah, let's not wait for them. Let's just do it on our own.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because I think one, if you have buy-in from your community, it's going to get done and it's going to get done right. And it's going to get done the way they need it to get done. If you had someone else come in and say, I see this issue, let's try and fix it. It's going to get done their way. And they're an outsider and that's not necessarily what you need. And so Adam, to what you were saying about what I talked about, I'm not sure if this is it, but this is the example I'll use. We worked with the town of Moran, which has a population of about 500 people, and they came to us at Thrive. I like to say Thrive is a yes organization, so we want people to come in and dream with us. And it's really like I talk with the staff a lot about you do not tell someone no. If you don't know it, you say we'll figure it out. And so I want people to always know they can come in here and learn and try and make their dreams come true, even if they're crazy, somewhat audacious dreams. We want to try and support that.
Now I know why she agreed to be on the podcast.
Yes.
It's a good thing they already had that yes thing down.
Exactly. No, so we got it. So this group of people came in from Moran and said, you know, we don't have a fitness center. We don't have any place to work out. We'd like easier access to work out. And so we said, yeah, let's see what we can do about that. And we were able to start, you know, working with the community of Moran. And we found out that there was this, you know, awesome man who owned a gas station on Highway 54 that was no longer being used. And he said, you guys can just have it. And you can put the fitness center in the old gas station. And so we were able to write a grant that got the fitness equipment into the center. We had volunteers who painted it and made it pretty and put up nice slogans on the wall to inspire and empower people. And then we were also able with that grant to get a key fob system. So you don't have to have someone working at the fitness center. Any member has a key fob that they can just go in and out with, and then it logs who's there. And then they have a security camera as well. And then the city kind of said, we'll own this. And the way you pay is it's a $10 fee per family per month, which is very affordable.
Yeah.
And it goes right off of your utility bill. So you don't even have to worry about it. It's like already put into your utility costs if you want to be a member of this fitness center. And so they were able to make that happen. And that fitness center opened, they call it 54 Fitness because it's off of Highway 54. Yes. And when they were able to do that, they got empowered because they saw that by putting their effort into something, it bore fruit. And then they looked around their community and they said, we have a local grocery store that's about to close because the family that owned it had been trying to sell it for years. No one would buy it. Again, it's a small community. And so they said, we really want to save our grocery store. Can you work with us on that? And so we said, yeah, we definitely will work with you on that. And that was a much bigger task. And it was stuff we'd never worked on before. But yeah. We decided in conversations with them that their best model would be to make it into a co-op. And typically when you think of cooperative grocery stores, you think of, you know, like the Merck in Lawrence and things like that. You think of these kind of high end, all Uber, organic.
Hipster, yeah.
Exactly. Hipster. Yeah. Yes. And that is not this co-op. just, you know, full transparency. That's not this co-op. Most of the members of this co-op have gray hair and I kind of love that. So we started working with them and they were able to, as a community, they sold memberships at $100 a piece to buy into the co-op. And then we were able to write grants for them to really help invest in the co-op. And we were also very, very lucky. We were able to bring on a Vista volunteer who has retired from her normal work. And this is what she does. She goes out and she helps people create these co-ops. And so she was really, I think, the magic in making this happen. And so within a year, they were able to turn that family-owned grocery store into a cooperatively owned grocery store. And it's now called the Marmaton Market. And it's doing well. And it's right next to senior housing, which made it that much more important to save that population there. But it just was, you know, taking this win that they had with the fitness center, and it energized them to say, we can do something bigger. So now I'm like, holy cow, I don't know what their next project's gonna be. It's probably gonna scare me, but it'll be good.
So I'm so excited by that story because there's this beautiful chemistry happening of identifying challenges, but also looking at what assets they have. And I mean, and you mentioned like the people of Allen County are the greatest asset, but even in that story, right, there's also like, here's a gas station that could be donated, right? Like,
yeah.
It's easy to look at that as a liability in a community. And they were willing to see that as something that could be used. And the same way with the grocery store. I mean, it's like, oh, there's this energy. So just amazing. I just would love to hear more along those lines as far as putting those pieces together and how this comes out of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think especially in rural communities and urban communities have a lot of this too, but I right now will speak from a rural perspective. We do have a lot of older buildings. We have a lot of places that have been abandoned because, you know, like in 1907, Iola was a town of 15,000 people. We had more people in the town of Iola than we do in the entire county today. So you're talking about these places that were quite big at one point. And so over time, like, it becomes dilapidated as people move out. And so one of the things that we've tried hard to do is really find these older spaces and work on not having them demolished, but how can we reuse them and bring them back to life in some way? But the idea is, don't just have something sit there so long that it falls apart.
Yeah.
How do you take advantage of it, you know, I say on the front end, but at some point in a way that you can use it for the good of the community still. And that's really what we look at. And it's the same way with our trail system. So what I would say is our crowning jewel for our trail system is the Lehigh-Portland trails. And it's at an old cement quarry. And about 2015, David walked out there with some of the individuals from a group called Iola Industries, which is a local philanthropic business group who happened to own that land. And he walked out there with them and he said, I want you to dream with me for a minute. And he said, I envision trails crisscrossing this area. And he said, I see this as economic development because we build these trails. It brings people to the community. People will shop. People, you know, will stay the night. And it will grow and grow and grow. And it'll be one more amenity that could attract workers to our mm-hmm. community. And to their credit, the people with Iola Industries said, I see it. I love it. Let's give it a shot. And so they granted us this easement to build these trails out at Lehigh. And most of the community had no idea that there was a lake out there. It was been hidden for about 40 years. And so when we started building these trails, all of a sudden, like you're cutting back years of trees and growth that just was an eyesore. And now it is the most beautiful scenic spot in our area. And people go out there to take pictures all the time. They're walking out there, they're biking out there. And it became an economic driver. We got a bike store out of it because they were like, holy cow, you need a bike store because you have a bike culture. Yes. It helped grow a bike culture that we were working to grow for years. And then, you know, through that, through being able to create this really beautiful space, we also were able to recruit people into the community. We work on the community side of recruitment at Thrive. So we partner with other organizations, mainly healthcare entities who are trying to recruit medical professionals into the community. And we were in the midst of building Lehigh at the time when a dentist and his family came into town, and we drove them out there and said, just dream about this with us a little bit. And the dentist's wife, she's from Colorado. She goes, I never thought I could be in Kansas and feel like I was back home. And so right there, we knew like, we're getting somewhere. This is good. And yes. So we walked them out to the lake and we had them stand in front of the lake and we took their picture in front of the lake. And a couple days later, you know, we knew they were thinking about where they wanted to be. We sent them that picture and said how much we enjoyed spending time with them. And it was a nice reminder of this beautiful amenity we had. And sure enough, they became a part of the community. They're still here. They've got three kids. They're active participants in the community. And so, and they're not the only ones. We recruit a lot of people for cross country from our college. Allen Community College says that that is their number one recruitment tool is Lehigh for their runners. So that's really awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. And I mean, I think one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is because as we promote neighboring, one of the things we ask people to do or try to be is a connector. And that's what your organization and our organization has in common, is just this desire to be the connector of things. You don't have to create all those things. You're just connecting people who already have these gifts, these resources, and then the whole community is growing stronger because of it.
Exactly. And I think, I actually think the connector piece is sometimes the most important. I would love to be the most creative person. I'm just not. But to have those creative people, a lot of times the creative people are super creative and then they don't know how to move that creativity forward. And if you can convene people together to work with them, then all of a sudden you've got a bunch of people working on something. And even with Lehigh, that's an all-volunteer built trail. We didn't hire people to come in and work on that trail. Same with our Southwind trail. And so that took bringing creative trail people together. And I've got to be honest, like Thrive was not a trail organization. We did not have a trail background. We didn't know anything about it. So we learned through it. And we were very lucky to be able to recruit a biking and trail expert into our community, Randy Reza. And he really kind of helped us take over some of this work. And he's out on our trails all the time still, volunteering, cutting new trails. So we've been very lucky to be able to find, as we work on projects, volunteers and people who are very passionate about certain areas and wanting to connect them to those areas. And then they continue that work. Because that's the other thing is Thrive cannot continue to do every project we implement. We have to be able to hand it off for other people to take over and to grow it in new ways. I used to work in the Twin Cities with the Sisters of St. Joseph. And one of the things I always joked about with them that I think is very true for Thrive as well is I would call it the backwards business model. So where you start a project or a program and it gets to a point where it's successful. And then that's where in the business world, you're like, yes, this is where we make money. In the nonprofit world, that's where you say, okay, we've put this up at this level where it's sustainable. It will do well. So let's hand it off to somebody who can handle it. And we're going to start the next big thing. And so it's always working on the hard stuff and then passing things off, hopefully when they've reached a level of security and sustainability. And so that's what I like to just refer to as a backwards business model.
Nice.
Oh, I love that. And I bet when you said that, Adam's imagination just got really fired up. He's just thinking about all the things that we should be handing off so that we can start doing new stuff.
I mean, I just didn't have a term for what we've been doing. And now I do. I'm going to just use it all the time.
Use it all the time.
I've been called backwards for years, but
I know. Yeah,
the business model part.
See, now you just own it. That's it.
That's right. It's a compliment.
I meant to do it. That's what I intended all along.
The advice I like to give when I speak with other rural communities, but this is not just a rural issue. This is anytime you're trying to start something, that the starting is the most difficult part. So there are a few things I like to say. One is watch your language. And I share this because if you're trying to be a leader, if you're trying to start something, what you say and how you say it matters. People are always listening. They are always listening. So I think one of the first things to do is just realize how you present and what you say and how you say it truly does matter. Also, I like to talk about it is scary. It's scary to go out and try something, but if you don't try it, you'll never know. And people are afraid of failure, and I get that. I am too. But we wouldn't live in an air-conditioned world. We wouldn't have lights. We wouldn't have telephones. We wouldn't have this technology if people hadn't failed. We fail to get to where we are. And so I like to talk about failing forward. So maybe you don't win right away, but take what you can out of that failure and move yourself forward just a notch. One of the examples I use is we tried to get bike lanes in a couple of our communities. It did not work. But instead, we got bike sharrows. So we got, you know, the stencils on the road that say share the road. Bikers will be on this road. So we failed, but we also moved forward at the same time. And so I talk about that. And then one of my favorite sayings that I like to use is from David. And it is action removes doubt. You will never know whether an idea you have is good if you don't try it. And again, it goes back to like, yeah, that's scary. It's scary to get out there. But you might have the most brilliant idea and you will never know it if you don't take that action. Mm-hmm. And if you try it, at the very least, you'll know whether or not it was a good idea or not. And then if it was, great. If it wasn't, okay, well, we'll figure something else out. Someone's got to try it. And then the other thing is, I think every now and then you just need to go big. You got to try something big, and it's scary. It's crazy scary, but it's so good to watch people try to do big, really awesome things. But the biggest thing I will say, or I'd say the most important thing, the thing I always try and leave people with is you just start. That's all it is take that first step. It doesn't have to be a big step. It can be a small step. It could be something as easy as going over to a neighbor that you've never said hi to before and having a conversation and starting a relationship, and who knows where it goes after that. Mm-hmm. And so that's really my big thing, is you just start.
Yes. Yes. Oof. We're just going to, every episode of the next season is just going to be that. We're just going to repeat it every episode. So
just start.
It's scary to start, though. It really is.
It is.
Never know what's going to happen, but It's what you've got to do.
Yes.
That's right. Okay, dear listener, if you're not inspired now, then I don't know what else to do for you. So, that's it.
Oh my gosh. Well, if you're not inspired yet, I would say check out the Thrive Allen County website. You guys, do you still have the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation video?
Yes, it should be up there. And if not there, on YouTube as well. It is on our website, though, and on YouTube. And then we also have a Facebook account as well, and Instagram and Twitter. So if you want to follow us on any of those sites.
Yes.
I'll have to set up some accounts before I can do that. But yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us.
Oh, of course. It's not my wisdom. It's the community's wisdom. And I just get to talk about it. So it's an honor for me to be able to do that.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us on the front porch. I can only hope that you are as inspired as I am. I don't know. Adam, are you still living in Sosa, or have you moved yet?
I've been looking up property in Allen County for the last 10 minutes of this episode, so.
Well, that's terrible listening, by the way. Also, you can't leave. What kind of interviewer are you? You're
she had me convinced way earlier than this podcast could handle, so.
It's true. All right, well, thank you so much for listening and joining us on the front porch. If this podcast has been helpful to you, I hope that you will share it with others. Let's spread the word, because it's happening in Allen County. It can happen where you live. And that's, I think, right. It starts with you.
Be sure to check out all the resources at www.neighboringmovement.org, where you can get your 52 weeks of neighboring and resources for your church and all sorts of information about how to be a great neighbor wherever you live.
Sounds good. And until next time, happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring.